is Lazarus being sick, Lazarus being raised up from the dead. We find in the first verse that a man by the name of Lazarus was sick. He was a brother to the sisters Mary and Martha, and they lived in the town called Bethany. We have here then a man that became sick. Sickness came into the world in and through sin. There probably isn't an individual listening to me that hasn't been at some time sick. If you haven't, you have God to thank for it. Some are in robust health all the days of their life. They never have a sick day. They have likewise God to thank for it. Others, they have a weak and a sickly body all their life long. This man, Lazarus, he became sick. Maybe that some of you that are listening to me have had somebody that was sick in your home. May have been your wife, may have been your husband, may have been one of your children, you mothers that have children. When one of your children becomes sick, how distressed you are, how concerned you are, how anxious you are about the child. It's natural for us to call in a physician. And when the physician comes, we are inquisitive what sort of sickness that the child or the person that's sick has, and if there's a possibility that it may recover. And now if the child or the person that's sick becomes worse, then we would resort to another physician. We wouldn't be satisfied with one, we would call another in. And we would be very anxious to know what his verdict would be. And if we have grace in our hearts, then we will resort to that heavenly physician. We will go alone, we will get on our knees, and we will beseech him that he would send down his healing virtue upon the body of our loved one, that it may be made well again. But this is what we find in the home at Bethany. These sisters, they had grace in their souls, and they believed likewise that Jesus loved Lazarus. And therefore, they send a messenger to Jesus, telling him, "Behold, he whom thou lovest is sick." They had faith. It may be that you have faith sometimes more for another person than you have for yourself. These sisters believed that Jesus loved Lazarus with this request that he would come immediately to them. They thought, sure, he would come. Why, if he loved him, wouldn't he come? Wouldn't he leave everything and come to their home? Didn't he know in what distress they were? Sure he would come. They were full of hope and expectation that he would certainly come. But now when Jesus received this message, then he said unto his disciples, "This sickness is not unto death, but unto the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby." It seems to be a contradiction, doesn't it? "This sickness is not unto death." Didn't Lazarus die? He sure did. I would take that he meant that it was not unto eternal death. And it would be to the glory of God, where the Son of God would be glorified thereby. Every sickness that a saint gets in this life is for a purpose. And it's to the glory of God if we are afflicted by his hand and if we are his children. He will in due time reveal unto us why that he has laid this upon us. Not only would the Son of God be glorified by this, for in due time he would raise up this Lazarus from the dead. And there would be many that would be there that would see this and believe in him, which would be to the glory of God and to the glory of Jesus. But likewise in this, there was a resemblance of himself. For he likewise would in due time and be taken and by wicked hands be slain and die. And he likewise would raise again to the glory of God and to the salvation of his church. Therefore, he tarried where he was 2 days yet when he received this message. He didn't go immediately to this home in Bethany, but he remained where he was 2 days. Well, this takes place likewise spiritually, my hearers. I wish there were many sin-sick souls listening to me. If you are such a person, then you've sent up many a message that the Lord would appear unto you, that he would pardon your sins, that he would assure you of your salvation and of your interest in him. And where you have sent up so many messages, and it seems as if there's never going to be an answer, it is Jesus that tarries. For wise purposes, he will come at the right time, and he likewise will do unto you as he done unto David of old. For David says in Psalm 40, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me. There's a time coming when he will incline unto you. And David could say that he had set his feet upon the rock and put a new song into his heart, and he filled his mouth with praises. So it will go with you, poor sin-sick soul. Though you may think it'll never come, you'll never find what you're seeking after. He tarries for wise purposes, so that when he does come, he will be glorified thereby. He then remained where he was for 2 days. And then we find that he speaks unto his disciples and says unto them that he was going to go into Judea. And the disciples, they said, are you going into Judea? But they were afraid to go into Judea. Why? He had been in Judea in the preceding chapter. He had been in Jerusalem. And he had been teaching in the temple, preaching to the people, and teaching the Pharisees and the scribes that he was the Son of God, that God had sent him into this world for his church, for his sheep, for his flock, and that for that purpose he was here. And they derided him. They would not receive this doctrine. They picked up stones and were going to stone him. And then he spake unto them and said, ye are not of my sheep, therefore ye believe not in me. And then they wanted to take him prisoner and kill him. And now he wanted to go back into Judea. Therefore the disciples were afraid that it would cost him his life and their life too. And they didn't want him to go. But he had a purpose in returning back to Judea. He was to come to raise up Lazarus from the dead. And therefore he spake unto them and said unto them that Lazarus sleepeth, but I go to awake him. They said unto him, if Lazarus sleepeth, he doeth well. This is true. If you've ever had somebody that was sick, very sick, they were being raged with a fever, and then suddenly they fall into a natural sleep, it's a blessing. It's a sign that that person's going to be restored. It's going to get better. Therefore, the disciples said the truth. If he sleepeth, he doeth well. But Christ didn't mean that. He meant that he was dead, that he had died. They thought he spake about natural sleep. But then he spake plainly unto them and said, our friend Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that we were not there, to the intent that ye might believe. Jesus then knew what had taken place back in the little home in Bethany. His friend Lazarus had died. Let us return there. You've been in a home probably where somebody was deathly sick. Some of you listening to me have had that. So it was here. And they had sent this message to Jesus, and you may be sure They were going outside of the door. They were looking up the road to Jericho to see whether Christ was coming yet or not, for they fully expected him to come. But he did not come. And now their brother got worse. It was to be seen that he was beyond all human help. Soon he would die. And then suddenly he gave the last gasp and he was gone. Oh, you can imagine what went on between these two sisters. They lost their brother. Oh, you that have had this in your home, oh, you know what went on in your heart. Oh, you know the sorrow, the grief. Oh, what went on in your mind when someone that was near and dear to you passed away. So it was here. And now we find that these two sisters are mourning the loss of their brother. All this family, these three people, we read, and Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Jesus then loved them. My hearers, what an inestimable blessing to be loved by Jesus. Why were they loved by Jesus? Was there anything in them that caused him to love them? Totally not. They were just like you and I. They were sinners. They were poor creatures. And they were subject to all the miseries of this life. We see this in Lazarus. Although he was loved by Jesus, he still was afflicted and he died. So it goes with each and every one of us. Death is certain and the hour very uncertain. All my hearers, these sisters then, oh, they were so troubled and they were so bowed down with grief and sorrow. They had lost maybe the one that supported them. This was a certain distinguished family because not only did Jesus love them, but they were esteemed and respected by many Jewish people living in Jerusalem. And now when the death of Lazarus was made known, and we find that many of the Jews that were his friends and that had dealings with him, they came up to mourn with these two sisters the loss of their brother. All these two sisters, they had a good hope for their brother. He had been loved by Jesus, and they loved Jesus too. And surely, when a person that loves Jesus dies, they go to a better place. But my hearers, this love is so wonderful. Oh, I wonder if there are some listening to something of this wonderful love that these sisters had. This love is so free, so sovereign, so pure, so unchangeable. Oh, it never varies. We vary, we change. But he never changes in his love. Whom he loves unto the end. All these sisters, they were loved then by Jesus. And all of you have been given to experience something like this. Then it has been cause for you too to fall away in wonder and amazement. Why has he loved you? Why did he pick on you? You may come out of a large family, and you may be the only one that has been the subject of his grace, of his mercy. Oh, then you sink away sometimes. You, the filthiest, the vilest, the worst. You who have been chosen and been given to know his love. Oh, this is a wonderful experience in this life, my hearers. We are all dead in trespasses and sins. And we love not God. We are enemies of God. We hate God. We fight against God. We don't want no part of God or of his Son, Jesus Christ. But now there comes a time when he comes with his Spirit and he convicts of sin. And sin actually becomes sin for that person. And that person can't go on any longer in sin. They begin to turn away from sin, to fight against sin, to war against it. They strive against it. They try to gain the victory over it. Have you ever tried it? Have you ever rose up in the morning and said, well, this day I'm going to see that I don't sin anymore. I'm going to watch my tongue. I'm going to watch my thoughts. I'm going to watch my deeds. I'm going to be careful, and I'm going to be prayerful, and I'm going to ask God to keep me. Have you ever done that? And how did you make out? Ah, my hearers, if you made out well, I feel sorry for you. If you're building upon that, that's entirely wrong. But if you found yourself so weak and so helpless against sin, and that sin was too strong for you, and that it brought you down in your hopelessness, and you began to say, well, there's no use of fighting against sin. I can't overcome it. It's too powerful for me. And you have practically given up. This is where Jesus comes. This is where he picks up his people when they are brought into their hopelessness, into their helpless state. And then he comes and he quickens. Then he puts a new life in the soul. And this life is the life of Jesus. And this love that he sheds abroad by his word and spirit in the souls of his people, overcome all sin. Overcome all your enmity, all your rebellion, and everything that's going on in you. Oh, this is a wonderful experience, my hearers. We don't need to fight then and to war against sin. No, we have a principle in us that overcomes this. And oh, we love God. Oh, have you ever experienced this? From being a hater, an enemy of God, to be made a lover of him. Oh, then we love his truth, we love his word, we love his ordinances, we love his sanctuary, we love his people. Oh, we have love then to that great and glorious being in heaven above. And we walk with God, we talk with God, we commune with God. Oh, God is our lover, and we can leave everything, no matter how dear and how lovely it may have been to us and how precious it might have been, we leave everything. Oh, what a wonderful time this is, my hearers. This is what these sisters had and this brother had in their life. Have you had it? There may be one saying to me, oh, I wish it had been that way and stayed that way. Oh, today it's so different. Oh, I don't feel anything of it. There was a time when I believed it, but now I'm so cold and I'm so loveless. I can't believe anymore that God loved me at that time. Oh, it is true. It does not remain, but he does not change. He is the same towards you. And no matter how far you may get from him, oh, he has a long arm, an arm of love, and he encircles that soul again, and he brings it to himself with weeping and with supplications. What a mercy to be loved by him. You don't have to fear if you ever had a taste of this love. I know you do. I do too myself. But he's of one mind, of one purpose. Nothing can change him in his purpose of love towards you. All these sisters, they were a special people in this respect. They were separated from everybody else. And they were respected likewise outwardly. They were a family that was dignified. They had a lot of friends. And now when this was known that Lazarus had died, a lot of these friends, they came to mourn with him, with them. And this is natural. Now, this takes place even to this day if somebody that we know, somebody that's a relative of ours, passes away, then we would go likewise and mourn with them. Now, the Bible teaches us this. This is religion, to weep with those that weep and joy with those that joy. And so it went here. And now amongst the Jews, it was a custom that for 3 days they would weep, and for 7 days they would call lamentation. And 30 days altogether, there was mourning for a person that passed away. These people then, they wept with these sisters. And now my hearers, the Jews, they had a custom when they were weeping, that they would go to the grave to weep. And then sometimes they leave. And after the 3 days, when they saw the features of the person completely changed, and they had proof enough that it actually was dead, then they would lament for 7 days that this person was dead. And then after this, they for 30 days were subject to their customs. The first 3 days, they didn't do any work at all. They didn't wear any shoes, any sandals, and they never washed themselves or shaved themselves. They remained what they were. And the most of the time, in their grief, they would rent their clothes, but they wouldn't sell the rents either. They would, for 7 days after these 3 days of weeping, neither do any work outwardly. They would do their own work in their home, but otherwise they would not work. These people, they came to the grave for 3 days. Why did they do this? They had a tradition that the spirit of this person that passed away hovered around the grave. Tradition had told them that within 3 days, some have been risen from the dead. And therefore, they kept to these traditions. And now these Jews, they came to weep and to lament with these sisters. And they remained in the house with them. And now Jesus, he spake unto his disciples that he would go to awake him. And he finally came. He came outside of the town of Bethany. And when it was known that he was outside of the town of Bethany, somebody must have made Martha hear about it. She immediately left the home. She left all the Jews, and she left her sister, and she ran to Jesus, who was outside of the town. And now when she came there, as she immediately spake unto him and said unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Who knows how many times they had said this together with each other. They had been looking for him to come, expecting him to come, and he didn't come. And they had said, oh, if he was only here, he sure wouldn't die. Now, why did she say this? She had faith, for she addressed him as Lord. And she spake as if it was his fault that he had died. For she said, if thou hadst been here, he had not died. Was it necessary for him to be there? Was his bodily presence necessary? Not at all. He had healed many and had not went to them. He could have likewise have healed Lazarus while he had been sick. But it was not his purpose to do so. Therefore, he remained in that place till he was sure that he was dead. And then he came. But she addressed him in this way. This Martha, she believed that he was Lord. And she said unto him, even now I know that if thou askest the Father, he shall give thee whatsoever thou askest. In this you would think that she had some hope that if Jesus would appeal to his Father, why then maybe her brother would be made alive again. But she didn't have this in her thoughts. For a proof of that is later on, as she was so filled with wonder herself. And now he speaks unto her, and says unto her, thy brother shall rise again. You would think that she would have accepted this word. Now, this was a promise that he would arise again. Did she receive it as a promise? No. She says, I know he will rise again in the last day, in the resurrection. We have here then Martha having faith in the resurrection of the dead. She believed that there was a last day coming and there would be a resurrection. And in that day, then her brother would rise again. There were many that doubted this resurrection of the dead. The Pharisees believed it, but the Sadducees did not. There is proof enough, even in the Old Testament, that there will be a resurrection. The Jews believed in this likewise, that God would reward the good with eternal life and the evil by placing them in hell. And therefore, Martha likewise had faith to believe that there would be a resurrection and that her brother would rise again. But Jesus speaks unto her and says, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, even if he were dead, yet shall he live. And he who liveth and believeth in me, he shall never die. Believest thou this? This is the way he spake to her. But this woman then was confronted with him who said he was the resurrection and the life. I that stand before thee, this Jesus then is the resurrection and the life. He becomes this for every soul that God has chosen from eternity. In due time, he becomes the resurrection and the life for such sinners who are dead in trespasses and sins. They are made alive, they are quickened, they are born again, they are led on the narrow way which leadeth unto everlasting life. He becomes then the resurrection, and he becomes their life. That life that he puts into their souls is indestructible. It never shall die, it never shall perish. I give unto my sheep eternal life, and not one of them shall perish. Oh, what a wonderful blessing, my hearers, if in this life Jesus has become the resurrection and the life for you and I. Oh, blessed is he that hath part in this first resurrection, for the second death will have no power over them. Jesus speaks unto Martha that he was the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, he shall never die. Believest thou this? Do you believe this, Martha? Do you believe it, my hearers? Do you believe he's the resurrection and the life? Has he become that for you? Is he your life? Can you truthfully, with your hand on your heart, say, yes, he has become my all and in all. Without him I will perish eternally. You will never die, or you will be taken up to be with him. What a mercy if you can believe this for your own heart and soul. And when he said unto her, believest thou this? She said, yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, who should come into this world. Oh, I admire her faith, my hearers. What a testimony, what a witness she gave here. I believe that thou art the Christ. Can you say so? Sure, you can say it with your mouth, you can say it with your mind, but can you say it with your heart? For this is what Martha was given to do. He was her Messiah, her anointed one, her Savior, her Redeemer. He stood before her, I believe that thou art the Christ, the one that all the Jews are looking forward to come. Thou art the one who has come into this world. What a testimony, my hearers, she gave of this blessed Jesus. She witnessed then boldly and fearlessly, and after she had said this, as she went her way, she went back to her home, and she spake unto her sister Mary, and said unto Mary, the Master is here, and he calleth you. She then was instrumental in bringing Mary again to Jesus. As you know, Mary was of an entirely different nature than Martha. Martha was a busy person, and in this we find that she immediately ran to Jesus. But Mary, she had remained at home. Probably she hadn't even heard that Jesus was in the vicinity. And she was in deep grief, in deep sorrow, Mary. Mary had been at the feet of Jesus many times when he visited their home. And she had been instructed by him. But now Martha was instrumental in bringing Mary again to Jesus by telling her that the Master was come and he calleth you. She then Mary, she immediately arose, and she left the house. And now when the Jews seen that Mary arose and left the house, they said, she goeth to the grave to weep. We will go with her. But Mary did not go to the grave to weep, as she went to the place where Jesus was, for he had not yet went from that spot where Martha had met him. And now when Mary came, she fell down at his feet. And she said unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Oh, again he is confronted with the same words that Martha had spoken. They both in words accused him of being the one that caused their brother to die. For had he been there, he wouldn't have died. But Jesus did not argue this point with this Mary, for she was lying at his feet, filled with sorrow and grief. And now Jesus likewise looked upon her and upon the Jews that were with her, and they were all weeping. Oh, my hearers, it isn't wrong to weep. It's a blessing if we may weep with each other. Overweeping is not good. Some people overdo it. They just let themselves go, and sometimes it's not too good for their bodies and for their systems. But to weep with each other when we have something that really we have to weep about is a great blessing. You know, it's a blessing if you have friends. When something like this takes place in your home, and you have a friend that comes in and mourns with you and attempts to comfort you. You know, better is a brother that liveth next door than better is a friend that liveth next door than a brother that is afar off. And so maybe some of you have found a debate. You found somebody that was right next to you, was much better to you than any of your brothers and sisters. So it goes in life, my hearers. And so here, likewise, they were all weeping, all the Jews, and likewise Mary. And now Jesus, he sees them all weeping, and he groans in his spirit. Oh, he's a human being. He was God and man in one person, is true. But when he saw this, why, his compassion and his pity and his feelings likewise were struck. But he had perfect control over them. He groaned in his spirit. Oh, he groaned in sympathy and in affection to Mary and to her sister Martha in their loss in that what they had experienced. And therefore he said unto them, where have you laid him? Well, he knew where they had laid him. He knew everything. But he put this question to them so that they likewise would remember where they had laid him, and their grief would be assuaged in this respect. Their mind was taken off it for a moment. He probably likewise spake this because he could have went right to the grave. He knew where it was. But if he had went to the grave himself, without even asking where it was, some of the Jews might have thought, well, this is a trick. This is a cooked-up job between him and Lazarus. And therefore, he did not go to the grave himself, but he questioned where it was. And they didn't say, well, there and there it is, but they said, come and see. So they took him and brought him to the grave. And now when Jesus saw all these people, they were all weeping. Mary was weeping and the Jews was weeping. And he was groaning in his spirit. And then we read, Jesus wept. This is a remarkable verse, my hearers. Two words, Jesus wept. You never read in the Bible that Jesus laughed. He did at one time rejoice in the spirit, but you do not read that he laughed. He was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And if you are a person that has been wrought upon by the Spirit of God, then you have likewise been given to seek him sorrowing. The Spirit of God empties a person, convicts a person, and gives that person to come with weeping and supplications. If you have the Spirit, you understand something of this. Jesus wept. Oh, there is much contained in these two words, that he stood there and wept. Many times he had wept, my hearers. It wasn't the first time that he had wept. Oh, he had spent most of his life weeping. The apostle says that often he sent up prayers with strong cries and tears unto him, that he may be heard. Oh, have you any likeness to him in this respect? Here he was likewise affected with all these people weeping, and he likewise wept with them. I can't go on any further, my hearers. I'm sorry that I couldn't get to the point where we are supposed to teach about. But the chapter is so long and it's so full of matter, therefore, I thought I would speak next week and pick up the message from this point. The Lord bless the instruction that we have given out of his word to your immortal souls. That's all for today.